One, two, three, four, just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day, yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say?
All right, time to start the show. I'm Ryan, that's Bobby and Dave.
Hey, I'm surprised you rebounded so quickly. You look like you have had a harsh
night,
Ryan.
Absolutely.
I may have gone to bed at 4 a.m., but anyway, I feel
not.
Fine. I appreciate your concern. One thing I have to say is, have you guys ever had a time where, and this happened to me last night, is why I bring it up. We were at a show in Imperial Beach at the Salty Frog, and we had an after party at my place. And the people we invited did that thing where they ask you if they can bring their friends that you really don't like right in front of them.
Oh, yeah, that's awkward.
What are you going to say? It's like, hey, oh, by the way, Ryan, can these two guys you fucking absolutely despise come? Like, yeah, fine.
I think that's where you go, yes. And by the way, I've moved. Here's my new address.
Anyway, so... one thing I wanted to bring up is, and I told you guys about it, first and foremost, there is no shortage of garbage shows, not just in this city, but in, all cities. People keep doing that thing that we've talked about before, where they try and, like, put a fun twist on stand-up comedy. You know, like, there's a...
Some assholes try and give away weapons for stand-up comedy contests, all kinds of stuff like that.
But it's
never heard of it.
But it's still traditional stand-up comedy.
True.
It's at a club or a bar, you know.
Yep. It's gotten worse since Roast Battle took off.
Right.
Like, the format of Roast Battle got so popular that now everyone's like, not only are they copying Roast Battle, but they're trying to come up with other things. Like, oh, that worked good. Let's do this twist on it.
Yeah, they really want to, like, have their own little sensation,
right,
you know?
Right.
So you have people doing what's called guerrilla comedy, which is they just set up amplifiers unannounced and start...
Yeah, in the zoo, right next to the gorilla cage.
Boo.
They love it.
No
Boo.
Good. Then there's one guy suggested that they do a comedy rave where there's eight people doing stand-up all at once while people, like, roll on ecstasy and, like, do glow sticks.
What?
Yeah. Someone suggested a comedy festival where there's, like, different stages going on at the same time and people can just wander from stage to stage.
Yeah.
That's not the right... You have to catch the premise, the setup. You can't just wander around.
There is also something in this city called Comedy Trolley, which is exactly what it sounds like.
Huge hit with a lot of comics in this town.
Yeah.
I do not do well in that setting.
Well, it's a captive audience. Yeah.
Right, but you're just riffing to people.
Yeah. Ugh. Anyways, so I went on this Facebook group for San Diego comedians. And I made a joke. It was intended to be a joke, which poked fun at these dumbass fucking shows. And I said, hey guys, there's still spots available on my comedy porta potty show. And I basically heavily insinuated you'd be doing stand up in a porta potty while someone shits.
Yeah.
And I thought,
which is different. That is a new twist.
And I was, what I expected was to get like some, I don't know, messages from the people that created Comedy Trolley that knew that I was making fun of them. But what I did not expect is that not only did people think that was a real show, but three people hit me up for spots on it. Literally three people were gonna let me shove them into an outhouse with a person shitting in it and just make them do stand-up comedy.
That is so fucking amazing. You know, at least one of those people too was like, they were gonna put their own twist on this already new twist of a show. They're gonna be like, you know what, I'm gonna be the one taking a shit and telling jokes.
Yeah.
Boom.
I want to, like, you know, with all three of them, I said the same thing. I'm like, dude, I was joking. If anyone ever asks you to do comedy in a porta potty while someone's shitting, please decline. I've not seen your comedy, but you're better than that.
But we were talking before the show about the possibilities that you could have with comedy porta potty. Like, what you could actually do, you could surround a bunch of porta potties in a circle at, like, a festival, have everybody shit, and have one comedian in the middle with amplification telling jokes that you didn't have to either see or be there long enough to not take a shit to, like, get. So... that could be comedy porta potty, Ryan. You could have invented something that will take off.
I The thing I'm most sorry about is that I didn't string them along and see how far I could push them. I think I might start doing that. I really wish that one of those three guys, I'm like, all right, perfect. Listen, okay, as far as 8 minutes, really, that's up to them. It's really how long it takes them to do their business. So listen, when they start wiping, that's the wrap it up line, okay? So
that's the check drop.
Yeah. The next person hits me up, I'll be like, no, you'll be the one pooping, and there'll be we'll all be watching you through the open door, all right? Now, you don't actually have to shit, but I want bare ass to that seat, okay? No undies.
Well, no, I think you should have an authentic audience. I think that's part of a comedy show, and I know just the place, because in the worst part of downtown San Diego, where we have huge homeless encampments, because we have a huge hepatitis A outbreak that is ravaging our city because homeless people are just shitting on the street and it's spreading, they have put up these porta potties in the worst parts of downtown. Now, one of the things they had to worry about was, we didn't want to put these porta potties up because homeless people would start having sex in them or dealing drugs in them. So they very
What's wrong with that?
They very wisely cut the bottom part of the porta potty door off so you can still see the feet of the person in the porta potty, assumingly so the cops can regulate what's going on in there. That feet would be how we would judge the audience reaction. So we go do porta potty comedy out there, and based on the amount of foot stomping of pants around ankles, we'd know how well you were doing.
Bobby, I'm honestly a little disappointed in how much thought you're putting into this idea.
I don't know what it says about me, but all I thought was when you said that they did that to prevent having sex or dealing drugs, I immediately thought of ways around it. Like I was like, oh, no, I could have sex with without
someone absolutely. Knowing. Yeah. Feet up on the seat.
I could sell drugs sitting down. Like, yeah. That's a terrible idea. Yeah.
Dude, with the porta potty show, though, you have to also tell the comics, like, oh, this is a tip bucket system, too, and don't be shy about asking for tips.
Yeah. All right, you're going to do 8 minutes of comedy, then we just want to see you shit in silence for two.
What's funny is it is hard to find good mics and good time. I've shared before how Damian Mercado and I had the Kumite, and we were looking for a place to do it for a long time because the audience kind of trickled out at the location we were at. We didn't think it was fair. We looked around for a long time and found this place, Bar Pink, that had a great audience. They had Saturday nights available, which is a great night because there's not a lot of open mics that night. And we wanted to continue our comedy Kumite, where you win these weapons at the end. So it was a funny thing. We just started up like 2 weeks ago, right after your wedding. We had the first one, and it was great. It was a good audience. Dave came out.
Yep.
We had a bunch of great comedians who I really enjoy. We had a fucking fantastic time. And then the next week comes around, which was just this past week. And my God, did it suddenly shift. Four comedians showed up. No audience showed up.
Ooh.
And I ate a dick in the way that you haven't eaten a dick since you first started comedy. You know how now we can say like, oh, I sucked. I didn't do so well on that. But now our gauging of sucking is like, yeah, I had them going for most of my jokes, but they weren't really laughing their asses off. Like, there is sucking now, and there was sucking when you first started, and people were, like, throwing bottles at you and yelling to get off stage.
Yeah. So, a few months back when I was running that pizza place gig for Shores, and a woman threatened to hit me in the face.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay.
I had one of those eating a dick moments last week at Kumite.
What happened?
Well, I got up to go do it, and already I'm frazzled because the equipment isn't working, so I'm on equipment fix mode for the first 45 minutes, finally get everything going. There's almost nobody in this audience, just a few people. I go up to go start the comedy show, and it's a bar, so they're pissed that I'm starting a comedy show, the few people who are there. My jokes fall flat. I just wasn't on that night, and they fucking hated it. And it's so hard to come back from that, especially as a host that has to go up in between each comedian.
Yeah.
It was just so hard. I was nailing crickets. And thankfully, some of the comedians who were there, like Brandon Fisher and stuff, were actually quite good, and they were able to kind of turn the crowd a little bit. But my God.
And then Bobby turned them right back off.
Yeah, that's what I did. I definitely did. I stood back up on stage, and they're like, all right, time to talk and yell mean things. Like, this is no longer listening to comedy. And I forgot that eating a dick feeling, and I got off stage, and I talked to Damien afterwards, and I was like, man, that really sucked. But it's really good to experience that every once in a while. And it's one of the downsides of not doing enough open mics. Like, I used to, you know, do what everybody did where you grinded and you did 1,000 open mics and the whole nine yards, and now I barely do them. And the problem with that is you don't go up in front of a kind of bored, pissed off audience who hates that you're there. They've just seen 8 people who suck and don't have any jokes, and they kind of hate you before you stand up. That type of eating a dick is such a powerful thing in the end because it trains you to be like, no matter what happens, it's going to be okay. Like, I can have these horrible fucking car wreck of a shows, and then the next week everything can be fine.
I was hoping this was going to take a different turn. I thought Bobby was going to turn this into his retirement speech. Yeah, like, I'm not doing comedy anymore. That was it.
I'm sorry, Dana White. This has been a fun few years.
At least it sounds like, you know, it was partially the audience for that, you know.
Sure. Which, but I was doing bad too. It was reciprocated. They started not liking me. I started doing worse, you know. So
right. But the thing is, at least you have that where it was a tough room.
Right.
What really hurts is when it's an okay room.
Yeah.
And you're the only one that doesn't do well.
True.
I mean, that's only happened to me where everyone does well except for me. Maybe two or three times, you know, in 8 years. But when it happens, you remember it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I was doing this cigar lounge in North County about 3 years ago, and it was a great lineup. It was
like he's telling a Vietnam story. Yeah. It was 3 years ago. I was up in North County.
Well, the thing is, they were a rich crowd, and I've said many times before, rich people do not like me. They don't understand my humor. I mean, let's run through my set list. First joke is about having no money and having to hire a tweaker to work on your car. A rich guy's not going to understand that. Right. Second joke about, you know, getting a ticket for like urinating in public. Like, he's not going to understand that. Right. So anyways, everyone did well. I went up, they hated me. They stared back at me with this just utter confusion on their face. Like, who are you and why are you here? And the only times, and I hate this, the only times I got a laugh were when I mentioned how bad I was doing and it would get a big ovation.
Everybody's like, we're on the same page with you on that one, buddy.
Oh, my great. I
finally
got
something I can relate to.
Yeah, but that happens.
That is hard, too, because when you do have the really hard audience, you can commiserate with the comedians backstage like, man, this is one for the books. Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Yeah,
but when a bunch of dudes do well and then you walk backstage and you haven't done well, it's like, hey, buddy, keep your chin up.
Yeah. No, even worse than that was I was playing the 710 Beach Club about a few years back, too. And I was sandwiched in the middle of two guys. Ooga. And the first guy did well. I bombed, and then the third guy did well.
Oh, yeah.
So that you have no excuse. Right. You can't be like, oh, the first guy soured the crowd, or they were all laughed out. You can't say any of that.
That's when you try to spin it. You tell the third guy, like, man, I really softened him up for it. Yeah. I did that on purpose, bro.
Yeah.
Set you up
lay
for success.
Lay a nice goose egg for you.
You owe me one.
Yeah. My tactic is I bring the crowd down so that you can take them back
Yeah, exactly.
I like to depress the people more than make them laugh.
You know, the flip side of that with a bad audience is when you have a great audience and a shitty show. I was at a club recently where they started a new promoter. They had a bigger crowd than they normally get on this particular night. And that promoter booked just the worst comics.
Oh.
And so just me watching, I was just hanging out, but just watching it, I was like angry that this crowd is being wasted on this mediocre talent. Like it was just so bad. And it just makes you so angry. It's kind of like, what the fuck?
It's like watching like
I would kill for a crowd like that.
Yeah.
And you're wasting it.
It's like watching the rich 16-year-old girl who gets a BMW for her birthday, but she doesn't care about it. So the paint's all scratched up. And she's like, the tires are bald on one side. Oh, fuck it. I haven't given an oil change in 60,000 miles.
She's like, I can't drive a stick. So it's just under a car cover in the driveway for months.
You're wasting it. Yeah, absolutely. It is funny, too, because you do get that thing where you want to, you almost want to walk up to the comedians afterwards and be like, you know that wasn't you, right? Like, that was them. They're like, they're in a mode. Like, you're, I mean, I don't want to say you suck, but like, you got all ways to go before you get that in a real crowd.
Yeah, I just want to like be like, just watch this. Walk up on stage, just fart real loud. Everyone just bursts in the stairs, walk back up, like, see?
But they'd be like, oh man, that was great.
So speaking of shitty experiences in life, I was cleaning out my closet recently, and I stumbled across this very interesting piece of my own history that reminded me of a time I was accidentally a creep. I stumbled across this car rental receipt.
Are we sure it's accidentally?
Yes, it was accidentally.
Let's listen.
I've been a creep on purpose before. This was accidentally. And I'm wondering if you guys ever had an experience like this. I'll lay the groundwork. I try purposely a lot of times to not be creepy, to the point where, like, I do podcasts. If I'm having a guest over and it's at my house instead of at Madhouse,
you answer the door in a robe.
Yeah, and it's a new female comic. I'll be like, hey, just so you know, my wife and kid are gonna be there and stuff. Just, I try purposely to put off a non-creep vibe to make people feel comfortable. So to me, it's especially like heart wrenching when I accidentally come off as a creep. This happened years and years ago. I was a single guy. I was doing a bunch of archaeology out in the desert, and I was on Match.com. And the way my schedule worked is I did archaeology for 10 days in a row out in the desert and came and had 4 days off. So it was like two work weeks and then two work weekends put together.
All right.
So that limited my ability to do stuff. Like, it meant that when I got home, I had basically 3 nights to have dates, and that is it. And then I'm back out for good. So I was like on Match. I was before Tinder. I was aggressively looking for dates and stuff. And it all started with my car had a recall. I had to go take my car in which case I got a rental car. Mm-hmm. And I started driving it, and I found this girl. She looked beautiful. Set up a date, and we went on our first date. I go to pick her up in the rental car, and she's like, "Oh, interesting, nice car." And I was like, "Actually, it's a rental." And she's like, "Wait, you rented this car just for the date?" And I was like, no. I had a brake issue. They got taken in. She's already giving me the skeptical eye. Like,
that is a weird presumption on her part. Yeah, though. Like, yeah. People have
right.
rental cars.
Yeah. Right. Right. But it got worse. So we went out, had a date. Great time. But clearly it wasn't necessarily clicking all the way. I was still like, she's pretty hot. I'm gonna leave this out just in case. I don't have a lot of hopes for this one, but I'm gonna leave it out. So I had called her a few times and gotten responses back, and we were okay. It was questionable whether or not we'd have a second date. And at one point, I had sent her a text, and she said, "Can't answer right now. I'm in class." And I went, "Oh, okay, fine." I happened to be getting ready. At the time, I was an ultralight pilot. I was flying these tiny little airplanes around. And I happened
Kaiser Soze right now. You're just picking out all these weird details yeah. and throwing them into your story.
Here's why. So this type of airplane, there's no cockpit.
And my robot were in it.
You're just hanging out outside. You have an inflatable wing over your head. You have a gigantic two-stroke fan motor on your back. You're in this little cart, and you're going. So it's deafeningly loud. You can't hear a single thing. You have huge earmuffs on. It would be like having a fucking jet engine right behind you. It's super, super loud. So I go, okay, and I literally put the thing in my flight bag, hop into the little craft, take off, and start going. I do my little flying around, have a fun time, land it, and then I look at my phone, and I have unfortunately blown her up. So what happened is I had clicked okay, like, okay, she's in class, done with the text.
Oh.
Put it in my bag, and my phone at the time was just hitting against the side of the bag, calling her over and over and over again.
Oh, no.
I had called her 28 times while she was oh. in class after she
that
had just
fantastic.
Asked me not to, and she had started calling back and being like, "What's going on? Stop this. You're like, you need to stop." And I can't hear anything. I'm flying a fucking small airplane with these huge headphones on.
Okay, well, wait, right there again. Once she called back and then you weren't answering after yeah. all those calls,
yes.
she should have put two and two together, like, oh, butt dial.
I'm more on her side of that one, that he's just a creep now.
Right, and at the same time, too, it was alternating between doing that and sending her texts of just random
dick
characters.
Just random yeah. dick pics.
Those were preloaded. No, but like she'd get like a text that was like colon, small letter B, letter 3, and then it would just get sent because it was whatever was pressing against the screen. I had sent her like 5 texts, 28 phone calls, and I got down. I was like, well, what do? I can't call her to explain yeah. to her what's wrong. So I sent
her. She thinks you're like the Zodiac Killer or some yeah. fucking weird ass.
So I sent her this text. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was literally just like, and it comes off as a completely convoluted story. I'm sorry. I didn't intentionally call you a bunch and then not answer your calls and send you a bunch of weird text messages. I was flying a random experimental ultralight aircraft and I couldn't hear your calls. Like, it just sounds
yeah,
like
that
a,
sounds oh my God
it sounds like a fake story. And so I was
absolutely.
Like so I was like, all right, what do I do to like set, like get this across, because yeah. she's obviously not gonna be looking at, like she's not gonna be checking messages and stuff. And I was like, I know, I'll send her a picture.
I know, I'll fly over her house in my ultralight aircraft.
All right, marry me in skywriting.
I was like, I'll send her a picture of me like sitting
holding
in the
my dick
sitting in the aircraft with the headphones on, saying, sorry, I was doing this. I couldn't hear your calls. I was accidentally butt-dialing you. I'm very, very sorry. It wasn't my fault. So I send her the picture, and then I just get a thing back that says, I've blocked you. Please stop contacting me, all this
oh,
stuff.
Wow.
I look, and I had kind of tried to take a selfie. And this, again, this was shittier camera days, 2009 or something. I had tried to take a selfie, and the selfie ended up taking a picture of just part of the aircraft frame that very easily could have, in its out-of-focus style, been misinterpreted as a dick. Like, it was just, it was a close-up of what looked like a bar just going across because the zoom was in on the camera, and
oh my
stupid
God.
Me hadn't checked it before sending. So I came off as the worst stalker creep to this poor
absolutely.
Woman.
Absolutely.
Who's like, wait a second, this fucking serial killer rented a rental car before picking me up, so I wouldn't know who he is. Then he calls me periodically and just assaults me with a series of 28 phone calls, weird texts, and tops it off with a dick pic.
That's fantastic. So second date?
Oh, yeah, I banged the shit out of her.
Those random characters I sent you, that is the formula for the antidote. When I get... Anyways, no, I've had some stuff where I was, this is more a little bit like I was...
He was piloting a submarine in the bay.
This one's a little bit more on me. Yours was just a series of unfortunate circumstances. This one was, well, you decide for yourself. When I was in college, I was dating this girl I was just nuts about. She was great. And I've always been a guy that values hanging out with your own friends while right. you're in a relationship.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Yeah, be together. But, you know, if you want to have a girl's night, go do that. And I need to do the same thing once in a while with my guy friends. So I had that policy back then.
Also known as a healthy relationship.
right.
A.K.A. normal.
Yeah.
So I don't think healthy is normal these days. But anyways, she was like, yeah, me and her roommate, we're going to go out for a girls' night to that pub that's in the college area, Effin's, you know it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, great, have fun. And so I was at home just watching TV, and I get a call from one of my friends because that's, you know, a very popular college hangout. Right. Like, dude. Jen's here with another guy. I'm like, what the fuck? And he's like, yeah, she like left here with another guy. I'm like, oh my God. You know, so I'm like crazy with just, you know, just pain and jealousy and sadness. And anyways, I'm like, you know what? I am going to catch her in the fucking act. So
satisfying.
She lived about 8 blocks from my apartment. I fucking walked over there. I'm like, when she comes walking home with this guy, I'm going to fucking pop out and be like, I fucking caught you. So anyways, I go. I fucking hide near her fence because she lived in this 2-story house. And all of a sudden, as I'm hiding, I get a text from my friend, dude, false alarm. That chick I thought was Jen came back. It's not her. And so now I'm like, oh, fuck. And that's when I hear my girlfriend and her roommate and her friend walking up the driveway to their door to come home for the evening. And now I'm crouched behind 2 trash cans. I'm like, all right.
Can I find a flower in one of these trash cans and make this a romantic gesture?
I'm like,
surprise, it's garbage day.
I took your cans out for you. So I'm like, just go inside. I'll walk home. This never happened. No one has to know. And then I don't know how they saw me, but all of a sudden I hear a roommate go, hello? There's someone behind our trash cans. And I had to just stand up and go, hey.
So you guys know you didn't split up your recycling? I've been here for like a half hour.
Surprise. You know, you can compost most of this.
So yeah, and they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I thought she was cheating.
Oh my God, you broke so early. You broke so early.
I didn't know what else to say. Yeah. What, go ahead, right now. What would you have said?
Surprise, how you doing? I wanted to surprise. I couldn't be away from you for that long, babe. I was sitting at home.
That somehow sounds more creepy.
Yeah. Still creepy, but not as bad.
Not nearly as bad. Yeah.
Oh, easy for you guys. You're not in the goddamn situation.
I've had a really similar situation to that back when I was in high school, but I want to talk about one that's changed it up a little bit. Here's one that I didn't even realize was sort of a creepiness. So I'm friends with a lot of LA comics. We all are. And so there's a female comic up there who I know. I invite her down to Madhouse sometimes. So I got her on a weekend, and as the weekend approached, she's like, hey, do you guys have any sort of lodging? Like the Comedy Store has a house, you know, shit like that. Yeah. I need a place to stay, otherwise I don't know if I can make it. I'm like, no, we don't, unfortunately, but you know, worst case scenario, you can crash on my couch. And I threw that out there, like, we're not great friends, we're acquaintances, but then I didn't realize till afterwards, like, how often female comics find themselves in just horrible situations like that, because she turned me down, she said, oh, no, that's fine, I'll stay with a friend, and it was like a week went by, I was like, oh, she probably thought I was trying to, oh, man, that's, okay, because I just tossed it out to her, like, oh, yeah, stay at my place.
Yeah,
it's just, I don't know, it's just weird.
Yeah, because every rapey scenario does start out that way.
Right,
yeah. Hey, no strings attached.
Right,
you know,
absolutely.
Just hang out at my place.
Especially since the hashtag Me Too took off, and then I was like, ooh, that probably looked really bad on my part to her.
Yeah.
It's funny these things that happen because, again, later on you're like, oh my God, I must have come off as such a creep. And you could imagine them telling stories of the creepiest guy they've ever met, and it would be you, and it would be justified.
Oh, you are an urban legend with your story. You are circulating around college campuses all over the country.
Absolutely.
No, one of the worst times that I came off like a creep, luckily I was able to make the people involved realize that I was in fact not trying to have nefarious intentions. But anyways,
I was hiding in a recycling bin.
Let me start off by saying this. I do not like, and I've never liked, the concept of sending dick pics, my own.
Right.
I just, I've never been comfortable with it. That's something someone always has now. Yeah. And by the way, I'm never happy with it. Every time I've taken a dick pic, I'm like, that's no good.
Yeah, dicks are gross, dude.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, every time I fucking take a picture of my dick and look at it, I'm like, that just bums me out.
Yeah. Right.
So anyways, I've, you know, when people have dated have said like, ew, send me one, I've always been like, nah, I'd rather not.
Yeah.
So anyways, I was dating this girl. Her name was Laura, and she was just constantly insistent that I send her one. Like, she really wanted me to. And I'd like, you know, I'd constantly be like, nah, I don't want to. And she'd send me like a, you know, a topless pic. I'd be like, thank you, that's very cool.
Not equivalent.
I still kind of don't like doing that. And so, like, she's just pushing. And I'm like, fine. I took one.
He goes to JCPenney's photo studio.
Yeah.
He has a nice backdrop.
One with the airbrush, like,
are those lasers in the background? Sweet.
It's holding a cat. So, anyways, I'm like, there. And I send it. And I realized that my friend's girlfriend, Laura, is right next to them. Now, so I started hitting cancel. Because, like, old phones, you had a brief window. You had a brief window to hit cancel. So I heard hitting cancel. And all of a sudden it said, text canceled. I'm like, oh. And all of a sudden my phone immediately blew up with my friend's caller ID. So I'm like, hey, dude, I just want to say, like, what the fuck? I'm like, hey, listen, you know that I'm dating a girl with your girlfriend's same name, right? All right, let's talk about this.
That's hilarious.
I've had those phone issues, too. One of my worst ones happened when I had, old days of like some of the first smartphones. I think this was probably like 2009 or something. And I had back text messages because, again, you used to have a lot of things in your drafts folder. Like I'd be sending a message. I'd be starting to text, especially during a fight. If you were getting into an argument with somebody with like a girlfriend, you'd be sending a text message and then they would send you something and what you were sending would go to your drafts folder. And if you never sent it, it would just stay there.
Yeah.
So I had a bunch in my drafts folder, especially with this girl I had been dating, and this back and forth, blah, 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 oh, well, fuck you, and yeah, your mom's a whore, and all
sounds
this
like
stuff.
Sounds like a good relationship. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. It's the worst of your relationships, because it's only things that would happen, like, in the middle of a fight, or, again, one of the things I would do is I would type the text message, and I'd look at it, and I'd be like, that's too mean to send. I'm not going to send that. It would stay in my drafts folder.
Save it for later.
Yeah. It would stay in my drafts folder. So all of the worst text messages that I had decided I am not going to send because these are really mean in the middle of a fight. Even in the middle of a fight, we're in that drafts folder. My phone malfunctions at one point after we break up. We are no longer together.
Oh,
and
no.
All of a sudden, my phone malfunctions and clears the drafts folder by sending them all out.
Nice.
This sends messages to girls that I had seen occasionally and hadn't seen in 2 years. Like, it was insane.
Oh,
and I start getting these texts back, like, what do you mean my mom's a whore? She's dead. We haven't talked in forever. It was one of the worst moments ever. And I was living in a condo unit downtown, and it started to come on, and it started to say, this message sent. And I was like, what? And this message sent. And it was doing it one by one. I was looking, I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And I, like, ripped the battery out before it could keep going. And then I was like, well, how do I put the battery back in and handle this situation? I actually went down into, like, the third level lower parking garage. Yeah. Where there's no cell phone reception. I popped it back in, and it went, connected to Wi-Fi. Message sent.
Now, time out, because horrible situation.
Yeah.
Or brilliant.
Horrible.
Because a pickup artist would tell you just mass-negged a bunch of girls.
You know the worst things you wouldn't say in the midst of a horrible fight with a close lover? We just sent those to somebody you haven't seen in 3 months.
Just negged a bunch of chicks for you, bro. You're about to get mad puss.
That was one of the better oh fucks I really messed ups in my life.
I think the creme de la creme of creepy text message stories has to be, this happened to a friend of mine. He was out on St. Patrick's Day, got blitzed, and then lost his phone. Woke up the next day without his phone. So he had one of those tracking things on it,
right,
you know, where you can find it. So he just go, and it was in Ocean Beach. So he drove to Ocean Beach, turned on, he used his friend's phone, turned it on, and the phone was in like the slow, you know, the wetlands over there,
yeah.
like Ocean Beach adjacent. Okay. There's nothing there but marshland.
Yeah. Right.
So he's like, that's very strange. So he tracks it and he finds this homeless shanty.
Oh,
it's like made of trash. He's like, and so he goes to his car and gets like a bat because he doesn't know like who could come running out at him. But he starts kind of using the bat to like dig through the trash to like look for his phone. And this homeless guy emerges and goes, "Stop ruining my house."
He's like, "Answer me this riddle and you can have your phone back."
So he goes, "Give me my fucking phone." He's like, "I don't have a phone." So he starts bashing this guy's like trash pile. He's like, "Okay, no, not my VHS tapes." And like, he's like, here. He like gives it back to him. And there's no battery with it. He's like, "All right, where's the battery?" He's like, I don't have the battery. So he starts like destroying his house.
He's like, "I know you did. It was signaling me 15 minutes ago."
So finally he's like, "Whatever, I got my I'm done dealing with this hobo. I got my phone. I'll get a new battery." He goes to work. He's a personal trainer. And this girl who he'd been swapping personal training sessions for like her tutoring him over there, it was completely platonic. She goes, "Well, anyway, those were some hot text messages last night." He's like, "What are you talking about? I lost my phone. I had to get it back from a hobo." And she's like, "Stop being funny." He's like, "I'm serious. Yeah, it was a whole to do. I had a bat. I had to break his fucking shanty apart to get my phone." She's like, "Okay, when you get your battery back for your phone, please promise me you won't check your text messages."
Oh.
And he's like, "I absolutely cannot promise that at all. Are you insane?" So anyway, he gets the bat. He buys a new battery, connects it, goes right to those text messages, and like that night, like she had sent him something ostensibly to him, but it went to the hobo that said like, "Hey, I hope you're having a good night." And the hobo responded as him, "Would you fuck me?" And she was like, "Well, you know, that's very forward, but I have had some feelings for you."
This poor woman.
And then the hobo sends back a picture of his flaccid dick. And she was like, "Oh my." And then like they start sexting, not knowing it was with a fucking homeless guy.
Oh my God.
I love the idea that she's like, "I guess that makes sense why there was a six-pack holder around the dick." Like, I guess he was covered in trash, wasn't he?
He was holding a little bindle.
Yeah.
That hobo. The hobo dick losing bindle that phone, is a that great was the worst day of his life, the hobo when he lost that phone.
Yeah, why is your dick next to a burning trash can?
Yeah.
Dude, although I'm going to say that the guy fucked up badly. When she said, "So, pretty interesting text messages," he should have immediately had like the wheels turning and said like, "Oh yeah, yeah, pretty fun, right?" And then just started playing along until he could piece it together, and then he could have banged her.
He's a personal trainer. He could have banged any of them. Yeah,
that was the thing. I was like, "Oh, this is great news." He wasn't that into her.
Yeah.
So it was just a lose-lose across the board.
That's hilarious.
By the way, Bobby, I had a question for you.
Yeah.
I was talking to this guy, and evidently he was a bouncer at a bar up at UC Berkeley, your alma mater.
Right.
And he was telling this time about when he had to kick out the entire UC Berkeley boxing team, which you were on.
That's true.
Does that sound familiar?
Did you? No, never happened to me.
No?
Was Fred Savage involved?
Yeah, no, he was in Stanford at the time. We had to commute to go prank him. It would be weird, though, because as you know, in general, martial artists, and this was my case when I was in the Cal team, this was my experience with all the other guys, they're the least likely guys to start fights. Like, they are the guys who are kind of like, "Eh, all right, I got to have a fight in 2 weeks. I'm not going to break my knuckles on your face right here for some stupid bar thing." They're also not usually drinking a lot because you have to make weight.
Right, right. Well, another thing about that is, like, guys who like to bar fight a lot, that's their only time to like test themselves and see how tough they really are. They're as tough as they think they are. When you box or do martial arts, you already know how good you are. You don't need to fucking test it out on some fat dude. Right.
Especially because on the Cal team, Fridays were open days, which means you got to spar as much as you want. Usually your sparring is regulated. If you don't have a fight that weekend, Friday is the sparring day. And so when you went to a bar on a Friday night to maybe grab a light beer or something like that, the last thing you wanted to do, all you did for 4 hours that day was fight killers all day. You have no desire to go fight somebody.
Okay, so then what's with this fucking boxing team you make?
I don't know. But what did happen a lot is a lot of people would lie about being on the boxing team and get into trouble, and that's probably what happened to your buddy. It was really weird because it's a small team. So you have like maybe 7 starters, maybe, if you have a good year, sometimes even less than that. And even out of those guys, only some of them are going to fight on a regular basis, like maybe 5 or 6. And so we all know each other, obviously, very, very well. And then you have like a maybe 10 guys who are, they might have had one fight sometime in the last few years. They're trying to get on the team. They occasionally will fight if we have an extra spot or they're fighting a lower level guy. And then you have a bunch of people who take the boxing class, which is taught by the boxing team. We train you how to fight, and then eventually, if you're good enough, we ask you to come and do some session sparring with us, and then if you are really good, you can eventually make your way onto the team. That's the way you actually make your way on the team. So you would have a bunch of people who took the class, like, hey, I took a boxing class, I took an intro to boxing class, and then would be like, I'm on the boxing team. Like, they would just make that statement, and it was a really good way to get girls. And one of the funniest things that ever happened is we were having a party at my fraternity. And by the way, this is only the second best boxing team impersonation story that I had. We were having a party at my fraternity, and a guy who was randomly there was trying to hit on one of my female friends. Completely platonic friend, but very close. And he said, oh yeah, I'm on the boxing team. And she immediately went, oh yeah? Oh, look, hey, Bobby. I'm like 10 feet away. He's like, come over here. And she goes, hey, this guy's on the boxing team. And I look at him, and he isn't.
There's 10 guys, yeah, and you're not one of them.
No, you're not. And he looks at me, and he goes, yeah, I don't recognize you either. And here's where I think he thought I was pulling the same scam. Like, I think in his mind, there was no boxing team. This is just an amorphous
pickup line. Hey, I'm working this angle, buddy. Yeah. Hey, over there.
It's like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah.
Because they're both con artists.
He had already made the point to her that he was, quote unquote, really, really good. He was like the best boxer on the boxing team.
Who says that about themselves? Anyway?
I know. Yeah. I know.
Even if you are good at something, I'm on the hockey team. Yeah. I'm very good.
I'm incredibly good. And so he goes, oh, I don't recognize you, but I'm on varsity. And I was like,
what?
My response was, you know, there's no JV in college, right? Like,
you're either on the team or not.
There's not freshman football. Like, we don't have that here.
We're all on varsity.
Yeah.
And I went, no, I don't recognize you. And he goes, you must not come a lot. And I was like, no, I'm there a lot. And he goes, I haven't seen you, and I'm the captain. And it was the funniest moment.
Oh, my God.
It was the funniest.
That's going all in on a lie, dude.
Yeah.
It was, at that exact time, I was the team captain.
Oh, my God.
Which was probably the best thing. So I go, oh, interesting. Hold on. I literally went upstairs to my room, came out with my bag, which has a captain's patch on it, and came, and I was like, do you have one of these? He did the flustered, I don't know, I don't have the things, I don't do that stuff. I'm a level
6. He slaps it out of your
hand. I'm not in it for the patches, man.
Level 6 in jiu-jitsu, I gotta go. And he ended up leaving. That was an amazing moment because I was actually there for it. But I had a lot of people who'd come tell me, oh, hey, my buddy's on the boxing team. And I was like, oh, really? Who is it? And then they'd tell me a name I'd never heard. And I'd say, your buddy might be lying to you. Yeah. And that would happen constantly. But my favorite one was I started dating a girl in my senior year. And she said, oh, my God, you're on the boxing team. Oh, that's funny. You must know this guy, my ex-boyfriend. And I was like, no, I don't know that guy. I don't know him. I mean, I know him as a person, but I don't know him on the team. And she's like, no, he's been on the boxing team for like 2 years. The entire time I dated him, he was on the boxing team. And I was like, and I looked up his record because I was a team captain at the time, so you can look up anybody's record. He has no fights listed. And I go, no, he's not. He wasn't. Yeah. I don't know if this was like he absolutely was not. And she's like, I am sure, because while I dated him, every Friday before the boxing team matches that were away, that obviously she couldn't go to because they were away matches, he would starve himself to make weight. And this dawned on me, this hit me, that he had taken this ruse so
either that's
far.
Super committed to the bit, or he has some sort of eating disorder.
Yeah. He would take it so far that he actually cut weight.
Oh my God.
In front of his girlfriend, who's not like a passing person in his life. Like, she's there, he's skipping meals and running with hefty bags around this person.
At that point, just join the fucking boxing team.
Yeah, right? You could be on the team. Yeah.
Well, later, so it turns out he is one of those people who took
Bobby confronts him. He goes like, it's a different team's from Canada. You wouldn't know him. Yeah. Different team.
Later, it turns out, I found out, like, so he had taken the class and he occasionally came down and worked out. He was never on the roll for a spot. He had never even done what we call a competitive spar, which is usually what we do before we put a person in a match. We'll go off to fight another team. You get to come along. You don't have an official fight on your books, but you get a competitive spar against somebody on their side so we can see that you're serious and stuff. He didn't have a competitive spar. He'd never traveled with the team. He had taken the class.
He could cut weight like a motherfucker, though. Yeah. He would come in and pound under.
But there was no rule once you had taken the class that you couldn't come down and hit the heavy bags and stuff. So what he would do is he took the class and then he would come down and hit heavy bags every once in a while.
Which does nothing for you.
Right,
you
don't
have any technique.
Yeah,
he was
exactly.
only 10-3 against the heavy bags. Yeah.
But he would then invite her to come, like when they would go to the gym together, oh, just come get me down in the boxing gym. So under her impression, not only is he cutting weight, but every time they go to the gym, she has to come pick him up from the boxing gym where he's punching heavy bags. So of course he's on the boxing team.
This is like the guy that can't tell his wife that he lost his job.
Yeah.
So he packs a lunch and gets up at 6 a.m. every
morning.
Falling
down. Yeah. Michael Douglas.
Yeah, yeah.
Or in this case, he unpacked his lunch.
His briefcase just has crackers.
He had gone so far, and this is the coup de grace, the cherry on top. He had gone so far, we have sparring jerseys, because one of the things you have to get ready for when you start sparring is you're not actually wearing like normal clothes, and you don't think that would matter as much, but it actually, like, how you have your jersey tied up affects how you can throw punches and things. It's kind of counterintuitive, but people tape the back of their jerseys and stuff. So we have these practice jerseys for sparring week where all the people who are gonna fight wear this practice jersey, and they tailor it the way they like. All right, I like it taped up just a little bit in the back and cinched around the sides on the kidney belt.
A crop top.
Yeah, exactly. However you like it. He had snagged this sparring jersey without any of us knowing.
God, he's stealing clothes now.
He carried it around in his bag so that he could pull it out when he was around his girlfriend and be like, oh yeah, I've got to fight this week. I got to make sure I go take this to the laundry and clean it.
And she never wanted to come to any of his boxing
matches. She couldn't. All of our teams, we occasionally had something at USF or something like that. Most of our teams, you were driving 8 or 9 hours to go to and stuff. So, like, they were far away, and it would make sense. Like, nobody ever came to any of my traveling
matches.
Where do you guys
think he was for those 8 or 9 hours?
Right! What did he do? How did he pull this off?
He was actually fighting, like, underground bare-knuckle fights.
Wearing a Cal jersey.
Dude, until you said the thing where he would pull the jersey out, I got to fight this weekend, I got to watch this. Until that, I was like, maybe he really thinks he's on the team.
Yeah.
Maybe he thinks just hitting the bag is on the team.
Yeah.
This is how boxing works. It was amazing. I ran into a bunch of those. And it's weird because I think boxing was a good way to do that at Cal, especially. You got 30,000 plus students. Again, a team of like 6 regulars. And it would be very easy to lie about it, especially if you had taken the class and you then knew that. Oh, I know everybody on the team. I've seen them because I've taken the class. I know who they all are. It was actually a pretty safe bet. If you lied and said you were on the football team, there's 50 people on the football team, a bunch of other people trying to get on, coaches, the whole 9 yards, and we see it every week on TV.
Yeah,
it's pretty hard to lie about, especially if you're 5'8". But anybody who's of decent shape, they could be super tiny, 125 pounds. We got a spot for you on the boxing team, right? Yeah. So it's a good one to lie about, and it turns out that a lot of people took advantage of it.
Now, did this girl ever find out about her boyfriend?
She found out when she started dating me. Like, literally, she dated him, and then she started dating me afterwards.
Okay.
And she found out, and she was mind fucked, because she was like,
Wouldn't you be?
Every day she would come back, and she's like, I don't get it. Like, he would literally be gone for those days. Like, he was gone. He cut weight. And then she was like arguing with me in the beginning about it. She's like, no, you're wrong. He has a jersey and I pick him up every day from the boxing gym.
That's hilarious.
Well, did she ever confront him about it?
I think she eventually told him, and then he was like, well, you know, we all just have different definitions of what a team is.
See, that's so... Going back to your first story with the guy that you know, tried to double down and say he was the captain.
Yeah,
Well, I've never understood those people, and they exist in the millions, where not only are they a liar, but when confronted with someone that knows better, they'll just keep going. Like the guy I said that came over to my house and said he was a 5 or 6 in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Like, you know, guys like that, they'll just keep going. I never understood that because, hey, listen, I've told my fair share of lies, but as soon as, like, there's a chance for me to get caught, I'm like, out of there. Like,
yeah.
A perfect example.
Well, the perfect example is the one you told earlier where they're like, what are you doing? You're like, I thought you were cheating on me. I'm in the garbage.
But back in my freshman year, me and my roommate had this thing that we'd do just for fun. I don't know if you've ever done it. It's kind of like a game. If you go to a party or a bar, you pretend to be just someone else, make up a whole backstory for yourself. There's no malice behind it.
It's an improv exercise.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was just kind of fun. Yeah, and so, but what we'd like to do, especially because it helped us meet girls, is we'd pretend to be from a English-speaking foreign country.
Right.
You don't want to fuck up and say you're from Germany. Because there's a 10% chance someone's taking German in high school.
One German guy fucks your game up.
Yeah, yeah. So go for English-speaking. So I'd say I was from Ireland. He'd say he was from Australia.
Uh-huh.
And we'd have the fake accents. It was neat. And, you know, it was, like I said, really easy to talk to a girl because it's like, you know, in a thick accent, like, oh, can you hand me that? They'd be like, oh, where are you from?
Yeah, right.
So anyways, we would do that a bunch, and all of a sudden, one time, we'd go to this house a bunch for parties. They'd throw one every 2 weeks, so we got to know everyone, but the first time we went there, we had these accents on, so every time we went back, yep. we had to fucking put them back on. Like, all right, we're from Ireland, Australia again, let's go.
You die with that lie.
Yeah, and so anyways, but like one night, they're like, oh, Ryan, this is Mark, he's also from Ireland. I'm like, gotta go. I was fucking out of there. No way was I gonna fucking like.
Oh yeah.
Try and like school him on his home country.
My throat's sore. I can't really speak very well.
Gotta go. I'm captain of the boxing team. Let's go run a meeting real quick.
God, I can't wait.
So you guys, interesting thing about this: when people lie about being in groups because they want to sound impressive.
Yes.
The flip side of that: have you had people name drop on you?
Well, yeah, that's comics, a similar dude. Thing.
But yeah, comics. Yeah, but the opposite side of that, I had this happen recently where an LA comic hit me up about, hey, I want to get into your club, I want to perform there. And he dropped a couple names that were like the bad names to drop.
Like open micers?
Two local open micers who just have bad reputation, like not funny. He's like, hey, I know this guy and this guy. That's hilarious to me because you don't realize how you just fucked yourself.
Right.
And so I always wonder, like, do they think those two are good comics? Or do they just meet them somewhere and those guys were like, hey, I got an in, just drop my name.
I don't even know if they knew them. What probably happened is they saw that you guys shared Facebook friends and were like, I share this Facebook friend. I don't know how I picked him up. I probably met him at open mic sometime. They share it with this guy who's running this club. He must love them. I'll just say I'm one of them.
Yeah, you know, at least that kind of name dropping is at least appropriate. I mean, you have to do that for booking sometimes.
Right, right, right.
Hey, Bobby, my name's Ryan. Our mutual friend Dante said I should hit you up. You know, and that's appropriate. What I can't stand is these guys that try and weave celebrity names into the conversation. I don't understand people that don't realize how off-putting that is.
Oh, yeah.
And it happens with comics all the time. Like, yeah, I was just having lunch the other day with my good friend Patton Oswalt, and he suggests we go over to my good friend Jim Norton's house. I don't like has that never happened to them? Because if it had, they would know how fucking douchey it sounds.
Dude, I hate even having to do that for credits. Like when you go to a show, especially out of town, they always ask you for credits to bring you up, which I fucking hate. And so you always have to come up with something like that. And so one of my go-to credits is I open for Dave Attell. Like, I was on stage before Dave Attell went on
Technically.
Stage.
Technically.
Yeah. But I say I opened, I'm like, I always feel like such a douchebag saying that. Like, oh, I opened for Dave Attell. I'm like, oh my God, dude, I fucking hate doing that. Yeah. But you have to. You have to. When you go to another club, you have to give them something. The audience expects to hear something.
I want to just list a bunch of really sad ones. Like, once met the guy who played Ernest from Ernest Goes to Jail at an autograph signing.
You know what? One thing that I always found hilarious when I was first starting, and you're just on shows with other guys who are just starting, and nobody has credits.
Right.
But like, you know, the headliner or something, they have, you know, they'll see him be brought out to, this guy was on Last Comic Standing. So it was always hilarious to see guys like grasp at straws for credits early on. Then have like next to nothing. They don't even have I open for someone. It's like this next guy, well, he's done shows. This isn't his first time.
He's going to stand upright the entire time.
Dude, I've seen credits on a marquee at a club here in town. One of them was from BuzzFeed.
What?
Like, could you get any worse of a credit display?
My funny intro in stand-up was I was doing bringer shows to start out with, like a lot of people do. And as they were bringing up the other comedians on my first show, I was like, oh no, these guys are super high up. This is my first show. I don't belong here because of all the credits they're listing. They're like, you'll notice this guy from his Comedy Central special. And I was like, oh my God. And they got to me and they did almost the same bullshit credits. I was like, oh, it's all just lies. It's just lies.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it's like, it also, I don't like it because it perpetuates the stupid audience.
Yeah.
Like people, they've gotten used to like seeing a credit and like, oh, let's go see this guy. Like there's a really good LA comic, Brody Stevens. He's very well known. He's kind of alty, but he's really good. He tours. He makes money. He makes a living at it. Mm-hmm. When he comes to our club, we put on the marquee from The Hangover. Because he was in The Hangover. He had a line.
Right.
Yeah.
He was on screen for maybe 32 seconds.
Yep.
But people see that, oh, he was in The Hangover, and then they come to the show. By the time the show starts, they forget about the movie and like whatever. And it just drives me nuts that we need to put credits
up there.
We do.
We have to fucking keep up with the other guys because, you know as well as I do, if someone was an extra on Reno 911 11 years ago.
Oh, right. they're riding that.
The Comedy Central logo will be very prevalent in every flyer forever.
Absolutely. It's funny. funny how like TV for some reason still holds that thing. Like our good friend Jesse Egan, instead of saying like, yeah, he won San Diego's Funniest Person, he has these great podcasts, he runs an entire show, they'll be like, you'll recognize him from a KPBS commercial about donating your car.
Oh, one time, this I don't know if I've told you this story. This guy, this old timer promoter, he fucking made me look like such an idiot with the credits he gave me. So first of all, I get to the show. It's a bar show. It sucks. He hands me this form to fill out regarding my name, my credits, and it's very detailed. It took me fucking 25 minutes to fill in all the shit. Like, I need radio credits, at least two, TV credit. God. I need you know, your hometown. Like, so anyways, I'm like, I fill this whole thing out, give it back to him. He goes up to announce me, doesn't even bring the thing with him. He's not reading off anything. He's like, this next guy, oh boy, this guy does shows all over San Diego. And already
straight
right,
from Ireland.
Yeah, straight from the cow boxing team. Already I'm like, yeah, thanks for having me fill out that form if you're not going to use it.
Yeah,
but
right.
Then he goes, and you know, he's got a Facebook. He's got a... Yeah, I think he's got an Instagram probably too. He's all over the internet.
He's got one of them smartphones. Yeah. I'll tell you that right now.
So it then looked like that's what I gave him as
a
credit.
Right, right, right.
I have a Facebook. I'm ready. Anyway, let's call it a week. Before we go, me and Dave will be in Phoenix, Arizona on November 10th. We're going to be at Toso's Bar in Phoenix, Arizona. Come check us out. All right, I'm Ryan for Dave and Bobby saying see you next week. Cruising with the twos.
Just nagged a bunch of chicks for you, bro. You're about to get mad puss.
Yeah, time passing by. Oh, 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 yeah, time passing by. Oh, 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 motherfucking time is passing by.
No, you'll be the one pooping. We'll all be watching you through the open door, all right?